This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to The Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. South Island Gear's result, he looks a bit shagged, people. I think he said he was a little bit tired.
Well, it was a long day.
2 days.
It was a long 2 days, indeed. Indeed it was.
So, what happened?
So the winners of the South Island Pairs were Jan Cormack and Grant Jarvis, and they won by 8%.
Wow.
Second were Malcolm Mayer and Brian Mace. Third, Liz and Blair Fisher, just 1% behind that. It was a great weekend. Gee, it was tough. 4 30-board sessions, pretty tough. A 30-board session is quite hard going, as anybody who's ever played the session that long will know. Well, having 4 of them makes for a tough weekend.
Are you not match fit for 120 boards?
Funny thing is, I reckon I could play 120 boards, you know, 5 24-board sessions, but 4 30s is 4 long stretches.
See. There you Are you going to let them know? Have they got a feedback survey?
No, they don't have a feedback survey. But I mean, hey, they won't be running that again anyway. A lot of the formats are obviously dependent on numbers and that sort of stuff. I mean, this one, there were 72 or 74 pairs, so you couldn't play everyone. So I think out of the 71 other pairs, you only played 60 of them. So everybody had 11.
Did you play Grant and Jan?
I believe we did, yes. Now, I'm sure they would have seeded it so that to make it fair so that everybody played the same number of the top seeds. That part of it isn't a problem. By the end of 4 30-board sessions, I think most of us were looking for somewhere to lie down.
You just love playing bridge, though, don't you? You just got to hang
in there. 30-board sessions, if anybody that's ever played a session of 30 or more boards, it's tough going. Don't the last half a dozen boards, they seem to do your head in.
Oh, dear. So How do you make it better then?
Well, we didn't do too badly. We sort of averaged nearly 53, which wasn't too bad. Could have done better. Sure, everybody would say that. Look, I'm a fan of online bridge, everybody knows. 7 hours of looking at a screen with just a half hour break for lunch.
Half an hour?
Yeah, we got half an hour for lunch.
Holy crap.
Yeah, they started at 9:30 in the morning. I'm not quite sure the reason for such an early start, but I guess they wanted to finish early. I don't know.
I don't know if I would be match fit. Match fit exercises? Do you have to do multiple blinks? And I reckon mini pauses is the way. You didn't get up and stretch or do anything like that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Funny. So when you were dummy, isn't that the time when you're meant to just zone out and take a rest?
Oh, well, I did do that a bit, but I still think maybe it's a good idea to get up and walk around a few times while you finish your 2 boards while you're waiting for the next 2.
So if you got 1 tip coming out of that tournament, what would it be?
Get up and go for a walk while you can. Just try and get away, just, you know, break it up a little bit.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
It's another week and we're back with Judge Julie. G'day.
Hi, how's everybody?
It's colder this week up here.
It is up here too.
It's fine.
I moved to Auckland for sunny days, not for grey, cold, misty days. So I'm very disappointed.
Fog at the airport, was it?
Yeah, today, really bad.
Enough of the weather report. Let's talk about something more exciting.
Like?
It's happened. We all know about red and yellow cards at rugby or whatever. They've got yellow and red cards at bridge and apparently had them at Morocco last year in the World Championships.
Yep, apparently. You were there, I wasn't, so.
Well, I was there. I never got a yellow card, and I didn't even know they existed. How many yellow cards were issued, Julie?
110 yellow cards were issued.
Wow.
And that is really simple. We talked about the cheating scandals that we've had, and we're looking at a deterioration and behaviour of players when they're dealing with the director and the rules, as we are looking at that across all sports when it comes to refereeing. And I know when I first learned to play bridge a long time ago, I was warned about the ethics, and I think it was particularly bad, and it's not that bad. But the statement from Alan Morrison, his fireside chat newsletters that he does, was reporting on the WBF and things. The behaviour of senior players needs to improve as that behaviour ultimately filters down, okay? In the WBF Shed Live video, of which a link is provided, so that you can watch and see if you can find the 34 things you should not do. And it has a link, it will get you a video of the things that people commonly do that are wrong. Now, we talk about lots of different things, and it is really hard. We teach the beginners how to play, and they take a lot of time, and often they're thinking about things that are not foreseeable about their hand. So when we learn and people stop and think when they're deciding what to bid or what not to bid, it is because they're trying to work through all the information they have and filter down to making a right decision. As we get better, then the things change, so that when we stop to think, clearly we have a hand that has got something in it that is worthwhile thinking about. And we are allowed to take time to think. But our partner is also getting information about how long it takes us to make a decision, about the fact that our hand has some value somewhere and we are considering taking an action that we may or may not take. And the laws of bridge are really clear that the only things we can do to bid based on the information from the play of the hand and the bidding of the hand, and not from extraneous information about partner giving wrong explanations about hesitating. And the other thing about it is the way that we deal with the director. When the director makes a decision applying the laws of bridge, that is what they are there for. And Tony Forrester many, many years ago wrote a really good article about how you are presumed guilty when something goes wrong rather than innocent. Despite the fact we're getting more based on equity, that is still something that happens. So when you call the director and the director gives a ruling, the idea is that you say, thank you, he's come or she's come, given the ruling. And if you have a problem with the ruling, you should always be able to ask the director if they can provide you with the information about it, even if it's not exactly at the time. And you can always appeal a decision that the director makes if it's based on experience rather than on the actual laws of the game. Slow play. We try to make sure everyone plays to time. People play slowly. Now, sometimes they are not the slow players, but sometimes we are trying to get people to move and they don't sit there and look at what happened on their last hand. They don't pull the sheet out to look at the hand and have an argument with the director about the fact they're entitled to hold everybody up while they take their time to be slower, right? And it might not be their fault in the first place, but we're just trying to keep the room moving to order. And there is an increasing deterioration about the way we respect people who are doing their best to provide for the game and to just do the things the best that they can. Everyone is human. So we're like every other referee. We may not get it right. We do the best we can, and in bridge we have avenues of appeal. But what we don't have is people that stand up and say, not necessarily abusive even, I think we're really good that way in bridge. We don't have a lot of people who are abusing the refereeing staff or the organising staff. We can always talk to the referee later and ask for more information. And your director should always be willing to help you, because that's what we're there for. At the end of the day, when we are directing, we're there to promote the game, to encourage people to provide an enjoyable experience. But if other people are being rude, arguing with their partners, not talking politely to their opponents, and all of those things, we need to do something about it. And if the yellow red card system works, then I would be in favour of it.
So, Julie, do you know what any of the reasons why these 110, I don't want you to go through all 110 of them, we'll be here till next week. Do you know what they were issued for?
Well, they said to manage behaviour. So, and as I said, my experience at the moment is that we have a deteriorating behavioural line about the way people talk to the directors and things when things go wrong, and about the way that people talk to each other. Now, there is a difference. We got told off by somebody in the weekend when we were playing online who didn't hear us say hello.
Right? Oh.
Now, it was a 20A online event in the weekend, and nearly all of us that are playing are there to try and do well. And so things do get to a stress point when you are being truly competitive. And so sitting down and saying, hello, how are you, to your opponents is nice, and we would really like that to happen. But providing people aren't being rude, I mean, when we have the Blues playing the Chiefs, for example, and they run on field, they're not shaking hands as they run on field saying, oh, I hope you have a good game today, are they? They are seriously focused on what's going to happen next. And although when they go off the field, they generally are supportive of each other,
yeah,
right? Because they've all played their best and things may or may not be right or wrong and things may or may not be stressed. But at the end of the day, we all like each other. So we all know each other. That's okay. So there are things around sociability and competitiveness where things can get a bit icky, admittedly, at times. The national events, you'd expect people to be polite. They will be focused on what they're doing. They should always be polite to their partner, to the opponents, and to the staff. If you have a problem with your partner, you can walk away from the table at the end of a match or at the end of a round, and then you can have a stand-up if you want, but you shouldn't be having it in front of your opponents. And I may not be one of the best people here. I know that occasionally we all get cranky, so we forget.
Maybe the format over the weekend of four 30-board sessions. 30 boards is a long session. Four of 30 boards is quite...
I don't understand. If we were playing face-to-face, we are playing five sessions for that amount as a rule. I don't understand why it was only four. But there are things about the staffing, people being available perhaps. I don't know. I agree. I came from the South Island where we used to play 36 board sessions because of the amount of time it took to travel to places and then you wanted to come home. So if you played 36 boards, had lunch and another 36, you tended to finish earlier. When I came up to Auckland and we played 24 board sessions, it was a holiday. I think I said at some point to somebody, it might have been you and Jenny, I can't remember, about not being match fit because we haven't been playing a lot of stuff that is so intense and for such a long period of time.
What is the minimum number of boards, Johnny?
For full master, yeah, you have to play a minimum of 20 boards in a session. Oh. That is if you're playing pairs. So when you play teams, the master points are done on the wins and the losses, so it's a different thing entirely. In Canberra, we used to play 320 board matches of teams, so 60 in a day, which is what we did. But we would play 60 in a day, which was with more breaks.
Right.
I guess we could have played 320 board sessions each day.
I would have been happy if we'd had slightly longer for lunch, so we actually had a bit of a break. By the time you get up from the table, you make your lunch and you sit back down again, you just don't feel like you've had a break from the game. So, and I'm just getting old as well, you know, when I was young. And not only would I have been happy with 30 board sessions and a 15-minute lunch break, but I would have been playing again in the nighttime as well. So, you know, and I remember saying about all these old people that wanted this, that, and the other thing and how bad that was. So maybe we're all just getting old.
Okay, thank you, Julie.
Radio.
Catch you next week.
Bye.
Last week we were talking about the rules of bridge. I have gone and noted rules 12 to 21 and a half. Have you ever heard of that?
How can you have half of a rule?
I know. Listening to the rules last week, some of it made real sense, but these ones I think are more common because a lot of people say, you know, like the rule of 12 or the rule of 20. But the rule of 12, Barry.
A lot of you probably know that when people lead fourths, you use the rule of 11, where you subtract the number of the cards led from 11 to see how many cards are held between the remaining hands that are above that card.
That's right.
So the rule of 10 and 12 is for people that play thirds and fifths.
That makes sense. So you use 10 if the lead is the fifth best, and you use 12 if the lead is from third best. So you've got something to guide you along there.
I actually play thirds and fifths. You can just look at the cards and you can work out what partner could have led from, whether it's a third or whether it's a fifth or whether it's a Doubleton or whatever the heck it is. I don't use the rule of 10 and 12. So that's that one done and dusted. I thought the rule of 13 was an interesting one, though. It talks about the different hand shapes, like whether you're 4-3-3 or 4-5-4-3-1 or whatever, what the shape of your hand is, the four suits. Now, I reckon if you asked the average person what they thought the most common shape was, 4-3-3 would be right up there. If it wasn't on top, it'd be close. Well, it's fifth, Mariana.
I know.
So that's remarkable. And another one that seems to come up all the time, because they're such a pain in the neck to deal with, is those 4-4-1s, the one we call the Anna Kournikova hands. You seem to get those quite often, don't you? Because they're a pain in the neck. And they seem to work out as well as you'd hoped.
They were last. I couldn't believe it myself. Out of the top 10 that came in.
They are in the top 10, but they have 10. That's remarkable. I wonder what our average listeners think the most common shape would be. I don't reckon many of them would pick this 4-4-3-2. Quite common, I guess. Second is 5-3-3-2. The third one, which I think was Jonathan Westerby's favourite shape the time we interviewed him, 5-4-3-1. We could call that the Jonathan Westerby shape.
Well, the reason this rule is quite popular, because it says the more you can familiarise yourself with the common patterns, the better. What does that mean?
I guess it's when you're, mostly when you're defending, if you can work out the shape of declarer's hand, it becomes much easier.
Right.
And often you'll have a lot of clues from the bidding, particularly if they've opened in a suit and rebid something or other, and then partners led something. You can often work out, like if they've opened a five-card major and then they've rebid no trumps, and then your partner's led a third or a fifth or a fourth or whatever you do, and you've looked at dummy, you've worked out how many partners got. So now you can work out how many cards they've got in that suit. So you've worked out they've got a five-card major, they've got five hearts, and they've got two or three of this other suit. If they've opened a no trump, they're probably 5-3-3-2 shape, although I know that people are opening off shape a little more. They might have 5-4-2-2, or they might even have a singleton. But at least on opening lead, you can probably figure out two of their suits.
I agree.
So if you know that they've got five of the major and three of another suit, they're probably 3-2 in the other two suits. Armed with that information, it's a lot easier to defend. There's a lot of work and there's a lot of thinking, and some people think, oh, it's just too hard, I can't be bothered. But if you can be bothered, it's worthwhile.
Right, let's talk about the rule of 14.
Yeah, this is a good rule, I think.
So to respond in a new suit at the two level, your hand should satisfy the rule of 14, which is the point count of your hand added to the number of cards in your suit should get to 14 or more.
If you've got a six-card suit, your partner opens a spade, and you've got six hearts and 8 points, that's enough to bid them. If you've got five of them, you probably should bid a no-trump and hope to show your hearts later somehow.
That's a pretty good rule.
I guess if you've got a really good six-card major, if it goes one spade, two hearts, and partner rebids two no-trumps showing 12 to 14, you can now bid three hearts to show the sort of hand that you've got. Just a weak hand with six plus hearts. So partner will know you've only got 8 or 9 points.
And the rule of 15, now that sometimes is called something else, Barry. So this is used for opening the bidding in the full suit. You should open the bidding if the number of high card points and the number of spades equals 15. This assumes that spades are likely to be evenly divided between the two partnerships and that a fit in spade may exist. What's the other name for it?
So that's called Pearson's Rule or Pearson's Law. So what that means is if it comes around to you in fourth chair and if you pass, the hand will be passed in, it's all about the spade suit. You should probably pass it in if you think you're going to get outbid. If you've got a 12 count or even a 13 count, but you've only got one spade, it looks like the points are reasonably evenly divided, and the theory is that the opponents are about to outbid you in spades if you open the bidding. But you can foil that by passing. So nobody teaches you about counting how many spades you've got when you do the lessons, but it is quite a good thing. So next time you're in fourth chair and you're thinking of reopening the bidding, do that, count your points, count your spades, and if it comes to less than 15, then you should pass.
Here's one that everybody probably just does anyway. The rule of 16, when an opponent opens one no trump, you should double whenever you have 16 plus points. Now, there is another little bit in here.
Yeah, it says this applies whether or not you are balanced or have a long suit. Now, I know a lot of players think that a double of one no trump shows a balanced hand with 16 plus. I agree with this, the suppliers, whether you are balanced or whether you have a long suit. Hey, look, if they play one no trump double and you've got 16 points in a long suit, well, that'll be awesome. You're on lead, aren't you?
There you go. Any shape by the looks. The rule of 17.
When your partner preempts to week two in a major, you have to decide whether to compete at the three level or bid game. One may use the rule of 17. Add your high card points to the number of trumps held. I don't know whether I entirely agree with that. I reckon the number of trumps held is the biggie here. If you've got three trumps, you should be looking at competing to the three level. And if you've got four trumps, you should be looking at bidding to the four level.
It's another law, isn't it? Law of total tricks.
That is the law of total tricks. Having a lot of trumps is a really good thing. Rule of 18.
Now, what do you think?
Well, back in the day, I used to play rule of 18.
No way.
I don't know whether I should confess this, but when I used to play with Jonathan Lane, we used to play rule of 18. That certainly meant you could bid a lot more. For a hand to satisfy the rule of 18, the total of high card points together with a number of cards in the two longest suits must come to 18 or more. Put simply, that means if you've got five spades and four hearts and 9 points, that comes to 18, you can open the bidding. So we used to alert our opening bids because we were playing rule of 18. I think it's a really good thing. And it's such a simple thing to do. You know, some people play czars and all sorts of other complicated things to figure out whether they can open the bidding or not. To me, that's quite complicated. Whereas the rule of 18 is a piece of cake. If you can count to 18, you can play that. We found you needed to be a little bit strict. If you're opening rule of 18, you probably need to have most of your points in your two long suits. But having done that, and the only other slight adjustment we made was if partner opens and rebids a suit and you've got a 12 count, don't just jump to game, which is probably not bad advice anyway. Just make a limit raise with 12 points. Lots of bidding, worth a go.
The rule of 19.
A 19 is the normal maximum point count for a one-level opening in a natural system. Maybe I can tell you that over the weekend I opened one with 20 points at the one level.
What's that?
I had no hearts. I had four spades, five diamonds, and four clubs and 20 points. What would you open it? 4054. I cannot imagine any reason why I would open that anything but one diamond.
So did you want to get to game?
Well, not unless partner's got some points.
Because you know they're going to bid hearts.
Well, they might not bid at all. In which case, I might as well play one diamond because I'll probably make that.
So what happened?
So I opened one diamond and partner bid two hearts, showing they had 4 to 7 points and six hearts. Forget exactly what happened there, but I'm pretty sure one of us got to three no trumps in the end.
And how did that work out for you?
It made. So what I'm getting at is there are occasional hands with more than 19 points. Some people, even with a singleton, might sort of decide to open their 20 points with two no trumps, even if they've got the wrong shape. It seemed like it was stretching a little bit too far for me. I wasn't going to open that two no trumps. You know, if I open two clubs, well, who knows where we're going to end up. Partner hasn't got 6 points. I don't think we can make anything.
Okay, and here's one that is widely used, the rule of 20.
That's what a lot of the beginners are taught. Rule of 18 is rule of 20 on steroids, isn't it? Pretty much. So the rule of 20 says you count the number of points you've got, add them to your two longest suits, and if they add up to 20, you should open the bidding. That's probably a good thing to teach your learners. And I mean, even that's reasonably aggressive. So if you've got 11 points and five of one suit and four of another, you should open the bidding. Once again, though, if you're opening an 11 count and you've got a singleton king or something included in there.
Yeah, it's a little bit wasted, isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe you might not want to open that hand. But I confess, there wouldn't be many 11 counts I wouldn't open if I had 5-4 shape. A lot of people open their 4-3-3s. And as we know, that's only the 10th most common shape now. But hey, I personally, 4-3-3s with 11 counts, I pass those.
Too much trouble.
You've got bad shape. You've only got 11 count. What's the big deal?
Okay, here's our favourite of the day, the rule of 21 and a half.
21 and a half? How can you have a rule with a half?
There you go. Read it.
The rule of 21 and a half says, if the number of high card points and the number of cards in your two longest suits add up to 20, and you have two quick tricks, open the hand.
Open the hand.
In third or fourth seats.
No, in third or fourth seats, one only needs one and a half quick tricks, not two. So in first and second, and you've got two quick tricks, you can open. And if you're in third or fourth seat, you only need one and a half tricks.
Ah, so that's where you get the half.
The rule of 21 and a half.
I reckon most of our list, or a lot of them, the eyes will have glazed over about now when we got to rule 21 and a half.
Okay, that's enough about rules for this week. All right, hey, Matariki's on Friday. We've got a long weekend coming. You playing?
We are playing. All day Friday starts at 10 o'clock. Just having a quick look through. How many tables have they got?
Restricted open. There's 8 pairs.
35 tables in the open. Did you say there's only 4 tables?
Yep, there's only 8 entries in the restricted open.
I wonder if they'll even run it.
The intermediate junior Swiss pairs, that has 20 pairs.
So 10 tables in the intermediate and junior, that's good.
Come on, people. If you've got nothing to do on Friday, good cause. Fundraiser for the New Zealand international teams going to Buenos Aires.
Love Block Wines are sponsoring it with a twin pack of wines to winners of each of the 4 grades. Not to be sneezed at.
No, and there's a spot prize for someone. Out of all the entries, you might be able to get that spot prize of free entry to the NZ Bridge Congress this year. That's not to be sneezed at.
That's worth a lot more than a bottle of wine.
If you play for the whole week, $550.
Register online at New Zealand Bridge, payment to the NZ Bridge Foundation, and should be a lot of fun.
Time for tips with Barry. What do you got for us?
I don't know whether it'll improve your play, but it might help. You've heard us talking to Judge Julie, and you've heard us talking about old bogey when there's a hesitation, your partner has unauthorized information that your partner's got some points, and the partner passes and it comes around to them, then they're under a lot of pressure here. They really can't bid unless they've got an absolutely clear-cut bid. If they've got a bid that's even slightly marginal, where a lot of people might consider passing, they sort of have to pass. If you're looking at your hand and you're thinking about bidding and you've hesitated for quite some time and you realize, oh my God, now I've done it. I've given my partner all this unauthorized information. My tip is bid something. It might not be right, but at least that relieves the pressure. Partner can now do whatever they like. Hesitating and then bidding is nowhere near as bad as hesitating and passing. Hesitating and then passing is the pits.
Do you think it's way up there?
Well, it is. It just puts too much pressure on partner. And obviously you're close to bidding because that's why you're thinking so long. So if you're close to bidding, find you've hesitated for a while. My tip is do something. But don't. The dreaded, most horrible, annoying thing you can do is to hesitate for ages and then pass. If you're going to pass, don't muck around. Do it quickly.
Don't muck around is the tip. Okay, well, that's it from us. We'll see you at the tables.
Okay, bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.